这时候讲到涅槃寂静，所以讲到涅槃的意思，就是我们靠业烦恼所自在的这个痛苦，这种苦厄，它是痛苦的本质，它的根本是靠我执而来，就是愚梦我的真实意之见解。那靠了解我的真理的时候，无我之意的当下，我们就可以知道说我执它是颠倒执，它是错误的执着。那当然我们就可以使我执更它的力量减少，然后靠着承办涅槃，证得涅槃。那当我们完全断除我执还有它的种子的时候，我们就得到涅槃真实的快乐。
There one is totally free from a conditioned existence conditioned by means of the fundamental ignorance. We spoke about how our existence is characterized by the ignorance, and how our existence is subject or in the nature of suffering. And the meaning of transcending sorrow here refers to our nature of existence conditioned by afflictions and fundamental ignorance, because so long as we remain under such conditions, we are under the power of this distorted state of mind, at the root of which is a mistaken belief in a self-existence or selfhood of one's own being. So by cultivating the wisdom that sees the non-existence of selfhood, by cultivating the wisdom of no self, one will be able to recognize this grasping at selfhood is a mistaken state of mind, and in this way, gradually, one will be able to kind of, you know, as a result of enhancing this wisdom of no self, one will be naturally able to gradually undermine the force of this grasping at selfhood, and in this way, remove it ultimately from one's mind. And that state where one is totally free of such afflictions and the fundamental ignorance is really the lasting state of happiness and peace. Therefore, in the fourth axiom, there's the statement that nirvana is true peace, and true peace here referring to the lasting peace and tranquility.
那我讲到这些见解，诸行无常，诸佛无我，涅槃寂静，犹如结果。那这四者，我们如果把它用在修行上，是要如何做呢？怎么来用来修行呢？就是因为是无常，所以讲说是无我。这个偈颂是在《四量论》当中所提到的。这些有行法刹那刹那变化，我们这样透过思维，我们就可以对它申请定解，真的可以知道说这些法真的是刹那刹那变化。在那个当时，我们可以知道说这些是靠因所自在。一般我们可以知道说一些法是靠因所自主而成立的，那特别是我们的这个运体，它也是我们好好仔细去思维的时候，就可以知道说它是靠因而来，因所控制的。那因靠无明因而来，我们去仔细想的时候可以知道，啊，不是无明因，也是烦恼因而来的。 所谓的烦恼就是让我们苦恼的意思，就是让我们堕落，让我们更痛苦。那我们是被他所制足。那以无明而言，虽然我们想要得到快乐，但是我们不知道如何去积快乐之因，我们不知道痛苦如何去断除痛苦之因。那说到习气的串习气的缘故，所以我们没办法断除痛苦。平时我们很重视很珍贵的这个我，它是靠运体而安立的。那当我们知道运体它是靠烦恼所自主的话，那当然我们就会想说，如果可以离开这个运体的话，那多好。我们知道说，只要有被烦恼所自主，有这个运体的话，那当然我们就没有一个时刻是真正的快乐。那要靠了知一切法空即无我这个见解来去除我执。虽然我执它是非常的强力，但是我们知道它是颠倒式，它没有正量为所依伴，它没办法依靠正量而成立，所以它是不坚固的。因为它是一种颠倒的执着，是一种妄执。所以我们在圣论讲说，靠无常我们来讲说苦，靠苦我们来讲说无常，来讲说这个无我。因为我们知道这个运体是无常的时候，我们就可以知道说常依自主的我是不存在的。那因为我们的运体是靠业烦恼所自在，所以它我们不应该把它占为己有，它不是我们真的想要得到的，那自然我们就会想要远离它。那要远离它，我们就是需要靠无我见。如果我们可以升起对峙，然后去去除运体还有运体的根源的话，那我们会升起说，我如果真的可以去除这个烦恼运体还有它的因的话，那我们真的可以得到一个解脱。
Of the four axioms into our actual practice of embarking upon the path to enlightenment. So here there is a natural sequence to how the understanding of one can lead to the understanding of the other. And therefore in a text we read, because it is transient, it is in the nature of suffering, and the realization of suffering will lead then to the understanding of the absence of selfhood. So what this suggests is that if we reflect deeply upon the nature of our own existence, and particularly our own physical and mental elements, such as our body, mind, and so on, these faculties, all of which are really the object of our own cherishment. So when we think of ourselves, when we have the instinctive thought of I'm doing this, I am, this the object of our and this sense of selfhood really is the physical and psychological elements that make up our existence. So if you observe deeply the nature of these physical and mental qualities that make up your existence, then it becomes fairly evident that none of them are permanent. They are all transient. They are all subject to fluctuations, changes, and so on. So the realization of their transient natures, particularly in terms of their moment-by-moment existence, can at least something that we can develop, understand intellectually. So once you gain an intellectual understanding of the momentary nature, the subtle impermanence of your body and mind, then this knowledge, the intellectual knowledge, can then be through constant cultivation, can be internalized. And this recognition, this understanding of the transient nature of one's own existence, can then lead to the understanding of their suffering nature. Because once we realize that our body and mind and our own existence is momentarily changing, it is subject to this moment by moment transience, that they are impermanent, then we also come to realize that they are products of causes and conditions. And once we realize that they are products of causes and conditions, then we immediately come to recognize that they are under the power of their causal conditions. And this is in general for all conditioned things, and in particular in the case of our own existence. Our own existence is characterized by unenlightenment, and this unenlightened existence is really conditioned by afflictions and karma. It's the karma and the afflictions that has given rise to our unenlightened existence, and at the root of which is the fundamental ignorance of grasping at a self-existence of our own self. So once you recognize that, you come to realize that your existence is under the power of karma and afflictions. And then when we think about the nature of the afflictions, the mental and emotional afflictions, even the very term affliction, the Sanskrit word is kalesha, the Tibetan word is nyommong, even in the very etymology of the term nyommong, and there is an immediate connotation of something that afflicts us from within, something that creates deep disturbance, something that inflicts suffering within ourselves the moment they arise. So any form of existence that is under the domination of these afflictive states of mind are bound to be in the nature of suffering. So once you recognize that, then you will also come to realize that on the one hand, in our normal conceptions of selfhood, we tend to grasp onto some kind of self as eternal, unitary and unchanging. But once you recognize that your body and mind are in constant flux, then you will come to realize that this belief in the self as unchanging, eternal, permanent entity is also misguided. And in this way, you will also gradually come to develop the insight into the no-self, anatman, no-self, absence of selfhood. So you will also come to recognize that this, in fact, this self that we tend to grasp at is not, in fact, worthy of grasping, because the grasping leads to all forms of afflictions and suffering and so on. So in this way, the recognition, the realization of impermanence lead to the realization of the suffering nature, and the realization of suffering nature culminates in the realization of no self. And it is this insight gradually overcome the afflictions and the state where one has totally eliminated such graspings and their effects, that is the true lasting peace, which in the Buddhist language is described as liberation or moksha. And once you have that kind of recognition of the possibility of attaining such cessation of afflictions and the possibility of attaining liberation, then the genuine aspiration to attain liberation really arises in one's mind.
Has your Sanghye been chosen as a 用对治断除烦恼，那以此作为基础而讲说的法，我们可以把它称为叫做佛法。
Thank you.
就譬如说断十二道很难说，这就是佛法，因为其他的宗教它也有类似这样的戒律。就譬如有一些因为怕法律而不去杀生的，那这个也不是属于佛法。就譬如说杀生会堕落到之后会堕落到恶道三恶道，那而不去杀生的话，那我们可以说这是内道跟外道共同的。那升起解脱之心，就是所谓的解脱，是心上的断除烦恼的一种功德，把它视为是一种解脱。那为了得到这个解脱而去行断除十二行十善的话，这个才是所谓的佛法的佛教的修持。
Grounded upon the aspiration to attain liberation as defined earlier, liberation as a total freedom from mental afflictions, ignorance and so on, then that kind of ethical practice could be described as a truly Buddhist ethical practice.
一般我们讲到法宝的时候，我们要知道说它指的是涅槃，就是我们所讲说涅槃即性的涅槃，就是所谓的法宝，法宝就是涅槃。三宝之内最主要就是法宝。那为什么要把佛宝放在第一个呢？因为整个教法的源流开始来讲是从佛陀讲说法轮，这时候在弟子心绪当中升起了道法轮、正法轮，内心升起的这个正量，那升起正量法宝的这些深重，我们就把它称为它是深。总而言之，就是不管是佛或是僧，都是要靠法宝而来。具足法宝的菩提伽罗，我们就把它称为僧。所以说，佛法是最主要的，佛陀也非常的重视这个法。
necessary for the Buddha to have internalized the knowledge of the Dharma, so, you know, and to reflect the importance in self. The same goes for the noble members of the Sangha, the Arya members as well. It is the embodiment of these Dharma knowledge which makes them Arya beings, the noble beings. Therefore, to reflect, to indicate the importance of the Dharma jewel, it is said that even the Buddha, in the scriptures it is stated that when the Buddha was giving teaching, he would arrange the seat upon which he would sit down to give the Dharma and to indicate his respect and reverence to the Buddha.
就是当佛陀讲法的时候，他会在个法座上讲法，那是代表佛陀是非常的重视这个法。所以佛教的见解当中，要讲说到四法印，讲在其当中有讲说到无我，那内外之分别是要靠见解来分的。那离蕴之常依自主之我，所以离蕴我是不是身体外面的这个我呢？所谓的这个常依自主我，就是我们可以指出来的这个我。那这种我是不存在的。那远离蕴之常依自主我主张者，我们也就是外道这些，他们主张常依自主的我。那可以说，所有的外道者、外道中义者，他们都主持这点。那外道者有一些，他们承认有前后世、无前后世，或者是有承认有宇宙创造者，或是无有宇宙创造者。但是只要是外道的中义者，只要是外道者，他们的见解，他们一定是承认有常依自主的我，成了一种离蕴我。所以靠无我的见解可以来分辨内道跟外道的分别。
To the four seals or four axioms of Buddhism, among which the most important one is the notion of no self and the denial or rejection of a belief in an eternal independent self. So, and this is in a sense becomes the mark, the characteristic mark of Buddhism, which is the rejection of any notion of independent self-existence, independent eternal unchanging self. So historically, if you look at the many philosophical schools in ancient India, they were, the demarcating line between the Buddhist and non-Buddhist really converges on the position on the question of self-existence, selfhood. On the one side are Buddhists who on the whole reject any notion of eternal, unchanging, independent self. And non-Buddhist schools on the whole believe in one form or another a version of self-existence or Atman, which is eternal, unchanging and unitary. Other than that, within the non-Buddhist schools, there are theistic schools and there are non-theistics. There are also some who believe in rebirth, some who do not, and so on. So the distinction really is made on the basis of the position on the question of self. And also within the non-Buddhists, there are some who accept
the notion of ideal. And also within the non-Buddhists, there are some who accept the
notion of
所以以无我见可以来分辨内外道。所以这里讲说外道他遍计万法，故许有常我。 它这个并不是以具身事的显现而来讲说的，它是靠中义、靠理由而来支持有，而来主张有一种我。那偏系万法，故须有常我。这是指一般的外道者，他是这样。那持复有，然后他有分为很多者，这就会讲说无因有果见。那比如说许无前后事者，就是说他们说没有因。就是认为说今生的这个运体它是没有因而来的，因为没有前世。那一些书论派有讲说这些法都是靠主我而生的，那它就是所谓的因果妄见者，他们有主张一种常自身是夫，或者是外道者有一些承认这个主我，他们都成了一种有常因。那因为因是常，那果就不应该有变化，果就应该是常。那因因为它是恒常，任何时刻都有的话，那它的果要不然就要不管什么时候都存在，要不然都无法升起，就应该有，应该只有这两种情况发生。那这就是所谓的因果妄见。那有因无果见，在解释里面有讲说到，就是靠前因，这前因就是所谓的常因，常因自主的我为因。那靠他所生的这个身体，因为他是多性的、多元性的，那他是不坚固而且是无常的。所以他的因是常，但是它果却生起来不相顺因的一种果，就是无常果。所以这就是有因无果见。虽然有因，但是它的果跟因的性质不一样，所以我们说它是有因无果见。
The extremists uphold the existence of the eternal self. For they reify all phenomena through conceptual imputation.So the reference to conceptual imputation here suggests that it's a reasoned philosophical standpoint, a postulate. So it's not just a kind of an innate, natural conception of selfhood we are talking about here. We are talking about a reasoned philosophical standpoint where on the basis of philosophical analysis and reflection, one adheres to a standpoint that upholds a belief in an eternal independent self-existence, a selfhood. So this is common to all non-Buddhist schools. And then within that group of non-Buddhists who uphold the eternal self doctrine, then there are differences. So we read in the text, the extremists comprise of those who view the presence of effects where there is no cause. So this refers to the Indian school Charvaka, who rejects the notion of rebirth and so on. So although they believe in the existence of an eternal, enduring, unchanging self, but because they do not espouse the doctrine of rebirth, reincarnation, so in a sense they accept the cause, but they do not accept they accept the effect, which is the existence of self, but they reject the notion of rebirth, which is the cause. And then the next one reads, those who view cause and effects erroneously And that refers to schools such as Samkhya school, which understand the origin of the cosmos in terms of what is called a primal substance, a prakrit, which is again permanent, unchanging, and so on. And this also refers to the Indian theists schools, which believe in unchanging, eternal first cause, self causation, or naturally arising cause. And so here the problem from the Buddhist point of view is that if the cause is characterized as eternal and unchanging, then how can you account for the origin of the world of effects, all of which very evidently reflect the quality of changing and fluctuation and transience? So how can one account for the origination of these effects from a cause that is unchanging and eternal? So this is, and then the third subdivision, we read those who view and those who view the absence of effects where there is a cause. So this refers to another category of non-Buddhist schools who, while accepting the self to be eternal, unchanging, and permanent, and they accept the basis of the selfhood, which is the body and mind, to be transient, fluctuating, and so on. So what is being pointed out here is that there is a kind of a contradiction between the characteristics of the cause on the one hand and the characteristics of the effects on the other.
那这之后就有一个总结，彼等皆是无明见，那就是颠倒执之无明。那这种无明见就是无法通达到事实的真理，它是一种颠倒的执着。哎，现在中国大师他有礼赞佛陀的缘起赞当中有做一个简洁一个总结，那这个字就是释迦牟尼佛如实的了知而讲说这些法，就是如实了知无我还有无自性的道理，如实的通达而对我们讲说。他是一个大师，就是跟随你的这些我们这些弟子，那我们可以远离一些罪魁祸首，也就是所谓的无明。那不跟随你这些人，他们虽然做一些苦行，好像是在就这些外道者，因为他没有跟随你，他们的这些见解是错误的，那因为他们有执着我是存在的，所以就等于说其实他们行了很多的苦行，也就等于在招引痛苦一样。那喜金刚大师他有讲说内外尘破分为尘破无我，成为内外二者，成立无我的也就是内道，破无我的也就是外道。
The truth that you have revealed on the basis of your own personal insight which is the truth of no self and the emptiness of inherent existence. And those who follow after your teachings and example and in the understanding of these truths, then for these individuals, gradually they will be further and further away from all sources of downfall. However, those who are contrary to the path that you have revealed, even though one they may resort to all sorts of hardships, including ascetic practices such as physical penances and so on, they will continue to proliferate the basis for afflictions. That's because they are continuing to reinforce their clinging to the notion of selfhood. So the idea here is that in addition to the innate grasping at selfhood that we all naturally possess, sometimes as a result of philosophical analysis, and one may also reinforce them and kind of solidify them through a process of philosophical reasoning, in which case, in addition to the innate grasping at selfhood, one will also have strong, powerful grasping of philosophically acquired form. So here the distinction between the Buddhist and the non-Buddhist is really made on the basis of whether or not one affirms the object of grasping of selfhood or whether one rejects and denies the object of grasping of selfhood. So here Jamyang Shepa has summed up in his root text on the Indian philosophies, where he says that it is on the basis of whether one is affirming or rejecting the object of grasping out of selfhood, the distinction between the Buddhist and the non-Buddhist schools is made.
那以佛教为什么有这么多见解呢？可能是跟这个有关系，跟《楞严经》里面所讲说的，他也讲到天圣、梵天圣，还有声闻等等。在此当中有提到很多圣，只要有很多戒、很多善根、不同的根器的话，那自然而然就会有很多的见解，还有综艺。以最近这个世界上而言，那以主要的这个宗教来讲呢，他们都有讲说到我们要好好的做一个人，好好的去让自己升起博爱关怀，然后可以让自己可以升为真上身，得到后世的人天之身，我们就称为这个叫人天圣。在外道里面有一些教派里面有谈到很多苦行的修持，那他们也有修定的这种修持，那他们最主要是为了让自己身为色界或者无色天，那他们我们可以把它称为是梵天身。 那这是我们就是这时候会提到的出世间圣，就是靠对治我执而让自己承办解脱之道，也就是出世间道。那这就分为，这就有声闻道、缘觉道还有大乘道这三者。
Major religious traditions that we observe today in the world, all of them emphasize the practice of ethical discipline, ethical living. All of them emphasize the importance of cultivating love, compassion, and the practice of warm-heartedness aimed at creation of a better human being, a kinder and a more compassionate human being. And all of these, so ethical practice is really at the heart of all of these spiritual teachings. And also many of these religious traditions also have
也就是有一些宗派讲说，如果好好的修持行善的话，我们就可以升到这个我们导师、我们主的净土。
Just as the vehicles for the humans and the divine beings. Then, in ancient India, there were also non-Buddhist spiritual traditions where, in addition to ethical practice and ethical discipline, there were also highly developed and refined meditation techniques, all of which are aimed at cultivation of a single-pointed, deep, sort of a heightened states of mind, many of which are described as form and formless states.
圣自己
就是靠专一摄摩他，也就是出境形象，它是靠这种修持而得到色界和无色界禅定，或者称为色界或无色界，我们就称为它就是梵天圣，也可以称为梵圣。
Beyond states of what I refer to as form and formless states, these forms of practices and the religious system that enshrines them from the Buddhist point of view, from this scripture point of Langa Avatara's point of view, would be understood as what is meant by the vehicles of the Brahma. Then there are other paths such as the paths that are primarily aimed at attainment of liberation from cyclic existence and elimination of the fundamental ignorance of grasping at selfhood and so on. So these paths, which are described in the scriptures as paths transcending the world, these paths again will have other divisions. For example, there is the path of the Shravaka vehicle, which is the disciples' vehicle, and there is the Pratyaka Buddha path, which is the self-realized ones, and then there is the Bodhisattva path, and these as described in the text here.
So, 我们刚刚有谈到楞严经所讲述的，只要我们的根器无量无边的话，自然我们的见解就会无量无边，那宗派就会无量无边。所以我们可以知道说，众生的见解是无量无边的，众生的根器还有戒是非常多。因此我们需要因应他们，我们需要不同的这个方法，不同的这个见解，让他们来去成就。所以我们不能说大圣最好，那小圣不好。那为什么要这么多宗派呢？因为每个人他都 需要自己能够接受、自己能够受用的这种宗教还有见解。那因为有不同的戒跟根器，那所以自然而然世界上有很多不同的宗教或是宗义，这些是需要的。
A recognition at a profound level that given the diversity of mental dispositions, spiritual inclinations, and interest of sentient beings, there is a need for the diversity of spiritual paths. So in relation or correspondence to the diversity of mental disposition, spiritual inclinations, and interest of the sentient beings, they will evolve paths that are appropriated and suited to these different mental dispositions and the needs and the spiritual inclinations of the sentient beings. So if that is the case, if that is a fact, then there is simply no basis to argue or make the claim in one way or another that this is the best path and that is the worst path. Because the evaluation of the validity of the path really has to be done on the basis of whether or not a particular path is beneficial and suited for a given individual. So simply because from a certain point of view, certain philosophical or tradition or a viewpoint or a certain path may be described as higher does not mean that that is the best. Because depending upon the need of the individual, there will be a specific path that will be best to that individual. So once, as a Buddhist, once one comes to recognize that kind of understanding, then one will immediately appreciate the need for the importance of greater spiritual interreligious understanding and in interreligious harmony.
So, 譬如佛教的修行者，那有譬如有大圣小圣，那以中医来讲，我们可以分为四中医。释迦牟尼佛他自己本身的见解是什么呢？是中观见，一定是中观见。那他自己的宗派，他并不是说只有讲说他的最究竟的见解，而是因应众生的根器而讲说不同的见解。因此释迦牟尼佛那我们如果不以敬语来讲说的话，那他并不是说随自己的意趣而随自己的本意随便讲说，并不是这样。他最主要是因应众生的需求。我们现在讲的是指佛教的这一部分，它是一不同的弟子、不同的根器、需求、想法而讲说不同的法，以此同样的，那外道也是一样，有很多法、很多宗教。那有些弟子，他们只要跟他们讲说有宇宙创造者的话，那他们能够接受。那对他这个人而言，宇宙创造者的这种的宗教是不适合他的。那适应有宇宙创造者的这个人而言，没有宇宙创造者的这个宗教对他是不好的、不适应的。最主要的，大部分的宗教他们可以分为两方面，就是他们有他们的宗义，还有他们的这个方法。所有的宗派他们都讲说要忍辱、关怀还有博爱，这是所有宗教的共同点。那这个就是 他们的教诫，他们的指导。那我们为什么要行这些宗教里面所讲述的这些东西呢？这些修辞呢？这宗派就有不同的说法。就比如说宇宙创造者，他们讲说，就是因为宇宙创造者，所以我们要使这宇宙创造者满意，所以我们需要这样做。那以佛法来讲，我们可以说，因为我们怕堕落后世三恶道，所以我们才来行善。所以说，我们说深不深奥，好不好，是看个人而言才能够讲说。就以中那所谓的以中派中义来讲呢，要说它深不深奥呢，那这就是要用另外一种方法来解说。那比如有四个宗派来讲，那中观派来讲是最究竟的。那中观派者也分为两者，一种是承认有自信者，一种是承认无自信者。那主张无自信者是为最究竟的。那以个人而言呢，什么法比较深奥，是要依个人的根性根气还有想法而来安定的，并不是说哪个宗教它就是最好的最深奥的，是要以个人的根气来安立。但是见解深不深奥就不一样。
You know, final standpoint may, from the point of view of Madhyamaka, be that of the middle way philosophy, but it is also a fact that Buddha did teach the teaching, the philosophy of the Vaibhashika school, Sotrantika school, and the mind-only school, and also Buddha taught the teachings and practices of the lesser vehicle and so on. So what we see here, even in the Buddhist context, is a recognition of how the Buddha's teaching of the Dharma is really has to be understood in the context of its appropriateness to the given audience. So in a sense, Buddha is not a case of an enlightened being who only wants to reveal one truth to everybody. It is a case of a Buddha having to, having to select what is most beneficial and what is most effective and what is most suitable in a given context and a given situation. So what we understand here is that the profundity and the value and validity of a teaching has really to be based on the evaluation of how beneficial it is. If it is beneficial to the given context, it is profound. If it is not beneficial, even though it may be a very profound teaching, it has no value. So the validity and the value of a spiritual teaching has to be really judged on the basis of its effectiveness and its benefit to the particular context. So from this point of view, we cannot really say this is more profound teaching than that, because the profundity and validity has to be judged contextually. Similarly, if we we can use that as an example from our own tradition, then to extrapolate from this perspective and then extend it to other religious traditions. So if you look at other religious traditions, generally speaking, we can see two dimensions to any spiritual tradition. There is the ethical teaching dimension, and there is the dimension which can be described as philosophical or metaphysical. Now, in the realm of metaphysics and philosophy, there may be a lot of differences between the religious traditions, but on the level of ethics, on the level of the ethical dimension, and there is a uniformity of message in all the great traditions of the world. All of them carry the same message of love, compassion, forgiveness, tolerance, and the need for simplicity and contentment and discipline. All of these are common message, ethical teachings of all the religious traditions. So from that perspective, one cannot say, and this is a better religion than that, and that is the best religion, or this is not so, and so on. One cannot simply make any such judgments, because they all carry the same message. And now, on the philosophical side, so what we can see is that, in a sense, the philosophy and the metaphysics are the premises or the explanation which culminates in the outcome, which is the core of the religious teaching, which is the ethical teachings. So the ethical teachings are the outcome of the philosophical kind of analysis. So in the realm of philosophy, obviously there are a lot of differences, because the differences lie in how you explain the importance of love, importance of compassion, importance of forgiveness, and so on. How you ground the importance of these ethical practices, and what explanations do you give, what are the reasons you give. There will be differences between different religious traditions. So for example, for some individuals, the approach of the theistic tradition, where a belief in an all-powerful creator, a divine being, is the foundation of your philosophical understanding, and the ethical teachings are grounded upon that fundamental belief, and where you, if you are grounded in that kind of belief, then your whole ethical, you know, the premise for the ethical practice would be to try to live your life according to how you can fulfill the wish or the will of that powerful creator. So for some individuals, that approach, the theistic approach, has a sense of immediacy, a sense of a power and effect. Whereas for some individuals, the explanation of the importance of the ethical teachings on a non-theistic approach would be more suited, where they explain that the importance of love, compassion, and so on really has to do with the importance of understanding one's own individual responsibility, the cause and effect, and so on. So that kind of non-theistic approach, where the emphasis is on understanding oneself as one's own ultimate salvation, that kind of approach will be more effective and it will carry a greater resonance. So therefore, we cannot really say that this particular approach is best and better, because again here, best and better really has to be judged on the basis of individual context. However, in the metaphysical, purely on the metaphysical and philosophical level, one can speak about certain philosophical ideas being more sophisticated, more refined, and more logical than others. That may be possible, but as a tradition as a whole, there is simply no basis for making judgments about some being better and other being worse.
就譬如我平时常常都这样讲说，譬如以药而言，药它有不同的，有些药它的佐料是比较贵，啊，所谓的药好不好，有些那药好不好要看它是不是对病而言，不能说比较珍贵的药它就是比较好，它是不是真的对这个病有治疗的效用它才是好的。那如果以药的价值而言呢，药有些是有些非常的，它的价格非常的昂贵，但是并不代表说它就是可以治所有的病，因为每一种病它需要不同的药。
Particular pill. So, however, when we make the evaluation about what is the best medicine, we cannot really make it on the basis of which one is more expensive, because the value of medicine really lies in its effect of curing the particular illness. So, whatever is the most effective medicine for that particular illness, it is from that point of view that is the best medicine, regardless of whether it may be less expensive than other types of medicine. Of course, from the point of view of the cost, we can talk about some medicine being more valuable in the sense of more expensive as opposed to others. But, you know, in a proper sense, the value of the medicine really has to be judged on the basis of its effectiveness with relation to a specific ailment.
所以所谓的药，要看它是对哪种病有效而已，并不是说它价值多好，它是靠什么佐料，它是靠什么资料所造成。同样的发也是一样，发要看是不是真的能够对治自己的烦恼，或者是使自己心灵上的增长。一般而言，我们没办法说这个法是好是坏。
Emotions and thoughts.
Maybe Sīcā Muṇī Phō in India, when he was thinking, at that time, there were some opinions, some opinions.那当然佛陀有讲述见解，讲述的见解跟那时候的一些中义的见解是不一样，但是释迦牟尼佛并没有说所以印度人都应该变成佛教徒。那时候释迦牟尼佛也有跟外道辩论，也有对外道显现神通，那释迦牟尼佛并没有说所有的印度人都应该变成佛教徒。
Buddha appeared in India in a cultural context of the presence of many other spiritual traditions and spiritual schools that were available there. And within that context, Buddha brought his own message of no self, rejection of belief in an eternal, abiding, enduring self, and so on. However, and of course, in some instances, Buddha has debated with his contemporaries on the virtues and the drawbacks of believing in the notion of selfhood and so on. But however, Buddha has never stated anywhere in his teachings, nor did he expect that the entire people of India turn into Buddhism or turn into Buddhists. He had never even imagined or never even claimed the possibility of or demanded that all the Indian people follow the Buddhist path.
That's the basis. 我是一个佛教徒，平时有时候我也说我是一个非常对佛法非常有强烈信心的一个佛教徒。那我也尊重其他的宗教，因为它不管是过去、现在、未来，都带来很大的这个贡献，它对人类有很大的贡献。而且利益了成千上万的人类，所以我们应该要尊敬，那应该要随喜他们。所以我们应该促进宗教之间的和谐。那这时候讲说到出世间道义有二，相胜与金刚胜，相胜富有三，胜闻胜度觉胜与菩萨胜，诸入胜闻胜则见。 那这里所指的是那这里如果我们更细微的去解释的话，就会是意思是就是入声闻中义见者了悟外道等于诸法真义纯义即偏计。那这个外道我们是指中义者，那等是指非中义者，就比如就是之前我们所讲说的顺势和摩兔，就是他不是颠妄执者，他只是不了解实相的这些外道。那这里所谓的损解就是不承认有前后事，那偏计也就是执着远离运体还有成一自主的我，那这些都是绝无断见及见常等，那离运之常一自主我。那这里是不是常见等是指一还有自主的意思？那这些的见者都是犹如取神为蛇，事实上都是没有的见运界及处等四大种为成，粗细的这些设法，这些实有的就是真实的这些设法，那承认他这些是无方分，那靠无方分的围城而成立外四大的这些见解，那以内心的心事来言，认为他是真实有，那这种见解者，再加上修习正视地。就是以随转还灭的两个方式来修学这个四谛的道理。那靠这个修习胜四谛故次第成就四相果，也就是预留等四相果。
Now the section on the Buddhist path vehicles begin.So we read, the path that transcends the world too consists of two categories. One, the dialectical vehicle, and two, the indestructible vehicle of Vajrayana. The dialectical vehicle in turn is threefold. One, the vehicle of the disciples. Two, the vehicle of the self-realized ones. And three, the vehicle of the bodhisattvas. And of these, the vehicle of those who have, the view of those who have entered the vehicle of the disciple is as follows. So here it refers to the lesser vehicle, philosophical views of Saravaka. And their view is explained in the following. They maintain that the nihilistic view, denying everything, and the eternalistic view, asserting the existence of eternal realities, which are postulated by the extremists and so on, by means of reification and denigration,are as untrue as perceiving a coiled rope as a snake. So here, the nihilistic view refers to the standpoints of such as the unreflective and the materialists and the nihilist, who on the whole reject the notion of life after death, pre-existence and so on. And the eternalist view here refers to the belief in eternal,enduring self, independent self that we spoke about. And so the disciples' vehicle, those who adhere to that philosophical viewpoint, maintains that these kind of postulates, which are rejection of rebirth and so on, which constitutes denigration, and belief in eternal self and so on, constitutes a form of reification. These are as untrue as seeing a coiled rope as a snake. And then, having explained what they reject, then the author goes on to explain what they actually espouse. Then it reads, in contrast, they view the aggregates, the elements, and the sources.
也讲说到色等外法是靠无方分之为成而合合的，那的这些蕴界处，那是它是靠无分之事而合合而成的，这个是只取它是真实有。
Philosophical understanding of the nature of reality, where they see the physical world, material world, as being constituted by indivisible, partless particles, which are devoid of spatial dimensions, and it is through the constitution of these indivisible particles, which through the aggregation of this, they understand the origin of the physical and the material objects, and they understand the origin and the nature of the consciousness in terms of aggregation of points of consciousness or points of mental states which are indivisible temporally from the point of view of temporal processes. So, and they understand both of these external material objects and internal mental states to be ultimately real. Of meditating on the Four Noble Truths, that in due course the four kinds of fruits or the results are realized. So the followers of the Charvaka vehicle, the disciples' vehicle, and they maintain that it is on the basis of practicing the Four Noble Truths that one will in due course attain the four kinds of results. The four kinds of result refers to the stream enterer, once returner, never returner, and the and the arhat stage.
等等，然后上界也听过了。诸入独觉者之见，如同声闻许诸外道于外法争议，先损于偏见，常我皆无。这是跟以上所讲的一样，与其不同之不同是。 同是于色蕴与一分法界，色蕴于一分法界达证无我。那这里所指的是无外境。 也就是说，能取所取二体空的这个见解，就是在独觉者的见解之中，这里讲说到，那就是声闻的这些无我见解，独觉者他们都承许，不只是如此，还许二体空。那与色蕴与一分法界达证我所指的是指。 如同我们现起所取，而不真实的存在，也就是所指的二取空，在《相关专言论》也。 提到说三圣的证种类是不同的，就声闻它是证的无我的种类，独觉是证的二体空的种类，那菩萨是证的空性的种类。所以这里所指的就是二许空。在《星光庄严论》中有提到说，独觉者他只是断除所取分别，而未断除能取分别，因为他们认为是它是真实有的。那以自己的见解而言呢，他就不承认所取是真实有，但是他承认能取是真实有。欲得正自果，自觉果际，亦非如声闻代三真事。就是当自己证的果位的时候，他并不是，他是靠自己的能力而证的，并不是如同声闻一样要观待三真事，自己靠自身的方式，是一往昔串习力以十二支门，就是十二支缘起门。所以这里就是所谓的他们通达缘起。要知道十二因缘的流转还灭之次第，如此通达真法性义，就是了解二取空之身法性义而得正智菩提矣。
Like a Buddha vehicle, which is the self-realized ones. So we read in the text, the view of, this is on page 34, the view of those who have entered the vehicle of the self-realized ones is as follows. With respect to viewing the eternal self and so on that are postulated by the extremist by means of reification and denigration to being non-existent, they are similar to the disciples. So the point being made here is that with relation to the teaching on no self, anatman, the adherents of the Pratyeka Buddha vehicle and adherents of the disciples' vehicles, they share the same position. So with respect to the doctrine of no self, anatman, the position is the same. Then we read, the difference is that they understand the aggregates of form and one aspect of the reality element to be devoid of self-existence. So this is a reference to the uniqueness of the viewpoint of the Pratyeka Buddhas. And here, the reference to the one element, one part of the reality element, it refers to the understanding of the absence of selfhood to the objects as opposed to the subject. So within the world of subject and objects, the adherents of this viewpoint are capable of rejecting the self-existence of the objects, but not of the subjects. They believe in the ultimate reality of the subjective experiences. So this way of differentiating the Saravakas, the disciples, and the self-realized one is similar to the one found in Maitreya's Abhisamaya Alamkara, the ornament of clear realization, where the wisdom of the three vehicles are clearly differentiated. So the wisdom, primary wisdom of the Saravaka, the disciples' vehicle, is that of the insight into no self, anatman, and the primary wisdom of the Pratyeka Buddhas, the self-realized one, is the insight into the non-duality of subject and object, which is similar to the mind-only school's standpoint. And then the primary wisdom of the Bodhisattva is the insight into the no-self of phenomena. So then we read that also at the time of attaining the fruit of self-realized one state, unlike the disciples, they do not depend upon a spiritual mentor. So the self-realized ones are able to gain the realization without dependence upon the presence of a teacher. So then we read, rather due to the force of their past habituation, they realize the profound ultimate reality by means of the 12 links of dependent origination and attain the fruit of self-enlightenment. So in the scriptures, the Pratyeka Buddhas, the self-realized ones, are particularly associated with a deep understanding of the mechanism and the dynamics of the 12 links of dependent origination, both in terms of forward causation of the first chain in the link leading to the second chain in the link and so on, second link in the chain and so on. And similarly, it also refers to the understanding of the 12 links of dependent origination in the dynamics of how by bringing the end of the latter, one can bring about the end of the former link in the chain. So this knowledge of the 12 links of dependent origination with context in the context of self-realized one refers to understanding its both causal dynamics and also the dynamics of how they are brought to an end. And so here the ultimate reality refers to the self-realized one's understanding of the absence of a duality between subject and object. So we read that they realize the profound ultimate reality, dharmata, by means of the 12 links of dependent origination and attain the fruit of self-enlightenment.
诸如菩萨圣者之见，忽然与清净万法身影无自性，就是所谓在幻象中个别不掺杂。那这里有讲，这里是讲说到中观见，中观见它又分为龙树，虽然是龙树的追随者。 但是有一些，他承认自信是名言有，就是清辩论师，还有清辩论师，还有莲花界，这些他们承认自信与名言上是存在的，他认为是有自信。那另外一派龙树的追随者。 就是月称论师，还有佛护论师，他们说量它是错乱事，而且他们不承认名言与名言有自性。那这里可以不可以解释成为秩序派的说法，或者是应承派的说法？ 那就素食，一般所破有不同的，就是虽然无真实，但是在幻象中还有个别的这些法相，也是讲说这里在讲说见解，无我的见解。 那这种见解要靠方便为助伴双运而修行。那这里有讲到十波罗波罗蜜多，就是六波罗波罗蜜上要加上。那这些都是从，这些可能都是从，我记不太清楚，这些可能都是从六波罗波罗蜜多所 分出来的，就是有，就是我想方便波罗波罗蜜多，愿波罗波罗蜜多，还有利波罗波罗蜜多，次第去入四地，终成就无上菩提，作如是许。就如同刚刚所讲说到的，就是中观派有 很多大师，那这里面有些说声闻，他有证得 法无我者，有些不承认圣文证得法无我，那有不同的说法。我同样无我，有些承认无我有生息之差别，有些不承认无我有生息之差别。同样的，在名言上有无自信之称许的见解是不一样的。有些称许在名言有志向，有些不承认名言有志向。
All phenomena of thoroughly afflicted and enlightened classes are on the ultimate level devoid of intrinsic nature, while on the conventional level they possess their individual characteristics in a clearly distinctive manner. So this particular sentence explains the philosophical viewpoint of the middle way school, which represents the Bodhisattva's philosophical standpoint. And historically, among the commentators on Nagarjuna's teaching on emptiness, they emerged broadly two distinct approaches. On the one side are great masters like Bhava Viveka, Haribhadra, and Shantarakshita, who came to Tibet, and Kamala Shila, all of whom, while rejecting the notion of true existence on the ultimate level, they accept some notion of svabhava or self-nature on the conventional level. On the other side are, again, commentators on Nagarjuna, such as Buddha Palita, Chandrakirti, and Shantideva, who rejected the notion of self-nature.
Self-nature, what is it?
So they reject, His Holiness was disputing my use of the word self-nature to translate for svabhava, because you know, by rejecting svabhava, or you know, it is sometimes translated as intrinsic being or self-nature or own being, or it's translated in differently by different translators, of course. So by rejecting self-nature or svabhava, as His Holiness points out, they are not rejecting individual characteristics of phenomena. For example, solidity is the defining characteristic of earth element.
那以自信这个词而言，他在《庄严经论》也讲说无自信。那时候在《利离音》的时候也讲说无自信。那虽然他主张与名言有自信，但是他用字上他又讲说无自信。那一般以自信来讲，是指探讨究竟义的时候无自信，但是他并不否认，一般并不否认说坚固是地的性质，地的自信。所以说自信来讲，它在不同的地方有不同的内涵。
On the other side are great masters like Buddha Palita, Chandrakirti, and Shantideva, who not only reject the notion of a true existence on the ultimate level, but also reject the notion of svabhava, this intrinsic being or self-nature or own being, even on the conventional level. So what we see here is that historically there emerged and different interpretations of Nagarjuna's teachings on on the teaching on emptiness. There are those who would, and so the differences lie in the either acceptance or rejection of the notion of svabhava, the self nature, on the conventional level. The differences of whether or not even the Shravakas, the disciples and the self-realized ones, it is necessary to realize the emptiness of phenomena in order to gain liberation. Some maintains yes, some maintains no. And similarly, there is a difference of opinion on whether or not between the selflessness of person and the selflessness of phenomena, there is a difference of subtlety. So, of course, on these details, they emerged, broadly speaking, two distinct approaches to understanding Nagarjuna's teaching on emptiness. And then the text then goes on to read that the bodhisattvas aspire to seek the unexcelled enlightenment, which is the culmination of traversing the 10 levels and the fruit of practicing the 6 perfections one by one. So what is being pointed out here is that in terms of the path, bodhisattvas traverse through the 10 bodhisattva bhumis, or the levels or grounds, by means of practicing the 10 perfections. So when we speak of 10 perfections, in addition to the 6, the sixth has further divisions of within that. So in addition to the 6th, which is the perfection of wisdom, then there is the perfection of power, perfection of skillful means, power, and aspiration, and transcendent wisdom. So it is on the basis of practicing these 10 perfections, the bodhisattvas finally aspire to attain the unexcelled enlightenment by traversing the 10 bodhisattva bhumis one by one.
Okay. 那以下, 金刚胜一分三胜, 四续胜, 二续胜, 那指外事, 外在的事, 二续胜可能指的是外在和内在的这两个胜, 那余切胜, 那就是余切部跟无上余切部, 融入为一者, 而讲说余邪圣, 诸入是续圣者之见, 为由无圣意生灭于世俗观本尊色身。 那这里是指一般密教里面所讲说的本尊余邪, 也就是所谓的天余邪, 那也就是观修随顺是果之道, 也就是所要观修生起本尊, 也是要从空正见现起本尊。 那要怎么来现起呢? 是要从未由无圣意生灭于世邪观本尊色身。 所谓的圣意无生灭的意思, 他自己本身是无自性, 虽然他本身就是无自性, 并不只是这样, 是要了解无自性, 他本身是无自性, 然后靠这种知道的, 了知道真理这种见解, 要把它现起本尊, 先抉择无自性之后, 那了解无自性之智慧, 它是所谓的索取形象, 那靠它, 那于世俗观本尊色身, 正影像心明, 念诵结界时要心术等主要依之具, 所谓的与因缘和合而成, 就是 要靠外在的这个接近来修本尊余切。
So the next, we read in the text, the indestructible. vehicle of Vajrayana has three classes. One, the vehicle of Kriya Tantra, that's the action tantra. Then two, the vehicle of Ubhaya Tantra, that is both external activities and internal yoga. And three, the vehicle of Yoga Tantra. So here, Yoga Tantra is a generic term that is used for both yoga and highest yoga tantra. So then we read the explanation of the first tantra. The view of those who have entered Kriya Tantra is as follows. Whilst there are no origination and cessation on the ultimate level, on the conventional level, one visualizes oneself in the form of a deity and cultivates the deity's image. So what this points out is that one of the defining characteristics of the Vajrayana path is the practice of deity yoga. And so the text here explains what is the heart of the deity yoga practice. And the heart of the deity yoga practice is to generate oneself into the deity on the basis of generating a deep insight into the ultimate nature of oneself. So the text reads that there are no origination and cessation on the ultimate level. So of course, in reality, there are no origination and cessation on the ultimate level. But what is being pointed out here is that one must cultivate the recognition of that, awareness of that, and cognition of that truth. And then the very mind that has understood that, that has gained that realization, that mind itself then arises as in the form of a deity. So we read that on the conventional level, one visualizes oneself in the form of a deity and cultivates the deity's image, which is the body, and the attributes, which symbolizes the mind, and the hand implements, and the mantra repetitions, which symbolizes the speech, on the basis of the power of coming together of the necessary ritual articles and other conditions. So the key characteristics of the Kriya Tantra is the emphasis on the need for of the external activities and the ritual conditions and so on as an aid for bringing about the realization of the inner deity yoga state.
那这里讲到金刚圣，所谓的金刚就是坚固的意思，就是无二的意思。什么无二呢？是智慧方便无二。那智慧方便无二是指什么呢？一般而言，以大圣有讲说到空性，空正见，通达空性的正见，空正见就是智慧之良。那布施等行为是方便之良，那智慧方便这二者需要双运，就譬如龙树菩萨的一个记诵里面有讲说，就是智力法身的贪力色身需要靠福德资粮而来承办。那这两种福德资粮也是随顺这二身的。同样的，月称论生的入中论也有很清楚的讲说到，就是要靠二只粮，就如同一个鸟需要双翼，靠这个鸟的双翼而飞到彼岸。我们有讲到秘密无尽轮，就是佛果位。这种果位呢，要承办这种果位，在因位时候，我们就要有方便智慧无二的修持。但是在波罗蜜多的时候，他没有讲到智慧方便无二，因为智慧方便他们的本质，他们体性 不一样，是个别的。那在金刚乘的时候讲说无二，就是方便智慧无二。它虽然他们的本质是不一样，那他们要并不是只有双运，一个相辅相成的意思。它这两个是要变成为一体，也是所谓的无二，所以我们称它为金刚。那方便智慧无二的这种道次怎么升起呢？最主要就是我们这之后在无上密的时候会想说到靠光明之事而来修与色身随顺之道。那同样在修随顺法身之道，那如此光光靠一个光明之事，那可以承办色身跟法身之因缘。那这种在无上面的时候会提到，那这个是可能的。那因为可以承办这种光明，那这个之前我们需要有一些前行基础，所以在下部的时候就讲说到通达空性的所取形象现为本尊的修持。那所升起的本尊，原这个本尊在修，在观想它是无自性的这种修法。就是原广大轮，所以它是方便。那因为通达空性，所以它是智慧。所以方便智慧它是一体的。那可能是就下部所讲的这种语气也是一体的。那但是最究竟而言是在无上面所讲的这个生意合一，生意无二。
So here it is important to understand、what is meant by Vajrayana, the indestructible or indivisible vehicle. So Vajra here has the connotation of indivisibility. So in that sense, we are talking about a vehicle that has indivisibility as its central characteristic. So what is the indivisibility we are speaking of here? So the indivisibility here refers to the indivisibility of the method aspect of the path and the wisdom aspect of the path. So it is the indivisibility of the two aspects of the path, method and wisdom, which is the essence of the Vajrayana path. However, insofar as the need for the union of method and wisdom is concerned, and this is also emphasized in the perfection vehicle, the sutra vehicle as well. For example, we find in Nagarjuna's text, there is an aspiration at the conclusion of a text where he draws parallel or correlations between the two accumulations, the accumulation of wisdom and accumulation of merits, as corresponding to the two Buddha kayas, the form body of the Buddha and the truth body of the Buddha. And it is by relying upon a path which has the two accumulations of merit and wisdom, one aspires to attain the Buddhahood, which is the embodiment of the two Buddha kayas, the two Buddha bodies of form and reality. Similarly, Chandrakirti explains in his supplement to the middle way, Madhyamaka Avatara, where he compares the two aspects of the path, the method and wisdom, as the two wings of a bird that cruises across the ocean to reach the shore of enlightenment. So again, there is an emphasis on the need for the union of the method and wisdom aspect of the path. However, in the context of the non-Vajrayana path, the sutra approach, and the union of the two is really understood in terms of one complementing the other. So the method aspect of the path and the wisdom aspect of the path, they are seen as two independent streams of realization. So the method is primarily characterized by the practice of the five perfections such as generosity and cultivation of awakening mind and so on, whereas the wisdom aspect of the path is primarily characterized by the wisdom of emptiness. And it is the complementarity of these two aspects of the path that one develops the union of method and wisdom. However, in the Vajrayana context, the union of the two is really understood at a much more profound level, where the union is not a matter of two factors, one complementing the other, but rather it is a union in the form of indivisibility. So in other words, both method aspect of the path and wisdom aspect of the path has to be present within a single event of a mental state. So how is that achieved in the Vajrayana path is reflected even in the early stages of the practice. For example, in the deity yoga meditation, the core of the deity yoga practice is to first generate understanding of emptiness. And this wisdom of emptiness is then imagined as arising, taking the form of a deity. So where within the single cognitive event, mental event, there is the realization of emptiness, and also there is the visualization of oneself as a deity present in a single event of the mind. So they are inseparable. But ultimately, the true meaning of the indivisibility of the method and wisdom arises really at the highest yoga tantra level, where within a single instance of the clear light state of mind, both the factor for the attainment of Buddha's rupakaya, the form body, and the factors for the attainment of Buddha's dharmakaya, the reality body, both of them are present within a single instance of the experience of clear light. So this is the ultimate meaning of the indivisibility of method and wisdom. However, even on the lower classes of Tantra, such as Kriya Tantra, the action Tantra, the deity yoga meditation really conveys this indivisibility of the method and aspect, be it on the level of imagination, because it's really at the level of visualization, but still within a single visualization, both the aspect of the path are present.
在解释里面，那之前所提到的，为由无生意生灭于世俗观本尊色身。那一般而言，在中论的时候有讲说，只要有空性，一切法都可以成立；如果没有，如果是无自性的，一切法都可以成立；如果是有自性的，一切法是没法安立的。那因此在无自性的当下可以现起种种的法，那在生意因为无生灭，所以在世俗可以现起本尊。那在此并不是说了知空性之好，了知空性之智慧要把它现为本尊。这是我们要安住于空性之道理，然后在这当中，然后来去观想本尊。我们说我们是密圣者，那虽然有念诵很多仪轨文，并不是说光只是有这个本尊的佛曼。那我们要光只是有这样不行，我们要现起清净的这个身蕴，然后再来升起佛曼。那光靠我们不清净的身蕴而来安立的这个我， 然后观这个我慢的话佛慢的话，那这是错误的。那当我们的内心如果可以很清楚的显现出清净的这个运体的话，就是本尊的运体的话，那当那时候我们说我的时候，所现起的我是安是施舍，是靠施舍清净的运体，然后所安立的这个我。虽然事实上它不是清净的，但是我们把它观为清净的。首先我们要，那要怎么做这个呢？怎么观修这个呢？之前我们有说说这些运体是需要断除的，那这些是靠业烦恼所自主的。那先观想这些无自系，观想空性的道理。那并不是说了解它是无自性，而且在显现而言呢，显现收容就是收摄了，所以这个不清净的这个运体，不只是你执着以取着的方面这分，而且你显现这分而言，都把它现起无自性之相。那就是在解释当中有想说到空正界，它本身要现其本尊，为有无生意生灭于事实观本尊色身，意思就是这样。我们都有在念诵这些仪轨，很多人都念诵密教仪轨，但是对空性我们却不去学习，那反而不重视空性，这是错误的。如果真的要修学密教的话，那一定要对空正界有所体会。如果真的要对密法那做一个真正的修持的话，那一定要对空性有很深的体悟。以前在印度有一些具格的行者，那有一些是持瑜伽见解，有些是持中观的见解。那总而言之，如果没有瑜伽就是唯识的见解或是中观的见解，你要来观你要来修密是不可能的。所以一定要通达这个无我之道理。那这个无我的道理呢，这种见要成为对治所智障的对治，一定要有菩提心的摄持。所以要修学密一定是显教的基础非常的坚固。那光如果是修学显教者，那他如果是修菩提心然后行六度者，光这样就是可以的，他可以不修密。那修密者他一定要有显教的基础，他需要有空正见菩提心为基础，如果没有这样的话是没办法修密的。所以这里有讲说到为有无生意生灭，所以在见解有讲说就是要了知道生意无生灭，那远离四句之，远离细论之甚深意。我们不管见到什么东西，我们都认为它是真实的存在。那如果它真实的存在，我们去寻找的话，应该找得到。那我们用四句的方式去寻找有无。有破有无声的这个正因去寻找，或者是说离一因的正理去寻找的时候，是寻找不到自性存在的。虽然我们见到这些都是很自主 自相存在。那我们很清楚可以知道说，用这些真理去找的时候找不到，那这些一定是无自性的。那靠这种方式，我们可以了解到中观之内涵。那在那个当下，空正见在自己内心现起之后，那靠此现起这个本尊之相，所以这时候在圆本尊，然后观他是无自性。所以这里就讲，这个就是具足了生命无二，因为他所圆的是广大本尊，广大轮也就是本尊的意思，圆广大轮，所以他可以圆满方便。那因为他圆的本尊又修又观修他是无自性，所以可以圆满这个空性，就是智慧之量。所以不只是深奥的空性，或者是本尊的这个现象明显相，它都可以具足。所以我们说它是生明无二的瑜伽。
Emptiness. Within that standpoint, all functions of everyday world of cause and effects and so on will be tenable. So that understanding is there. But here, in this context, the understanding of how one arises on the conventional level as a deity, although on the ultimate level there is no cessation and origination, and the meaning here is a deeper one. And which is explicitly brought out in Kong Tru's commentary of this particular section, where he says that while abiding in mentally on equipoise, one's mind equipoised on the absence of origination and cessation on the ultimate level. So this reference to, you know, one's mind being equipoised refers to the need for a deep understanding of the emptiness of origination and cessation on the ultimate level. And this, I think, is an important point, because normally there are quite a number of people who perceive themselves as practitioners of Vajrayana, Tantrayana. We do sadhana practices, we have mantra recitations, and we also do some form of visualization of oneself as a deity. But so it is important to understand what exactly is the core of that deity yoga meditation. What is supposed to happen when you generate yourself as a deity? Because in the course of deity yoga meditation, not only must one visualize oneself as a deity, but also one must cultivate the identification of oneself as a deity. So in addition to visualizing oneself as a deity, there is also the need for cultivating the identity of a deity. So here, there is a form of identification that takes place. So if there is no understanding of emptiness as the basis of that meditation, then what could be happening is a further reinforcement of a sense of clinging to I, the notion of I, of our ordinary sense of selfhood, which is really grounded upon our ordinary bodily existence composed of, you know, flesh, bones and so on. However, what is required in the Vajrayana deity yoga meditation is not only a clear perception of oneself as a deity, a visualization, but also an identification with the deity on the basis of a pure aggregate, a purified aggregate. So here, what is required is not only the dissolution of the grasping to inherent existence of ourselves, but also a dissolution on the level of appearance of our own perception of ourselves as ordinary person composed bodily existence, composed of flesh, bones and so on. Therefore one goes through the process of dissolution into emptiness, and therefore Kong Tru writes in the commentary that from within that state, devoid of origination and cessation on the ultimate level, on the conventional level, one arises as a deity. So the point being made here is that, you know, not only on the level of apprehension one needs to reject or negate the inherent existence of oneself, but also on the level of perception as well, one must dissolve the perception of oneself as an ordinary person. And from within that state of emptiness, one then assumes the form of a deity. So it is that realization of emptiness of oneself that arises, that assumes the form of a deity. And when that happens, then there is a real union. And then otherwise, what happens is that once, you know, no matter how many times one may recite the mantra, how many times one may visualize oneself as a deity, none of them will really become truly Vajrayana practice, because the core element of the practice of deity yoga is missing. No matter how, whether one may have done 3-year retreats, or whether one may have repeated the mantra of a particular deity so many times and so on, none of them will really become a truly Vajrayana practice. So the point being made here is that, as explained before, in, you know, as a foundation for the practice of Vajrayana, in order for a Vajrayana to engage in a successful practice of Vajrayana, it is indispensable to have at least some form of experience of the understanding of emptiness. Without the understanding of emptiness, there is simply no basis for the cultivation of the deity yoga practice. So when we speak of the understanding of emptiness here, it could be according to the Chitta Mantra, the mind-only school, or according to the middle way school. Historically in India, there have been yogis of followers of both the Chitta Mantra school, the mind-only school, or the middle way school, who have been great Vajrayana realized masters. So an understanding of the ultimate nature of reality, either according to the Chitta Mantra, the mind only, or of the middle way, is indispensable as a foundation for a successful deity yoga meditation. So, and in order for the understanding of emptiness to become an effective antidote to overcoming the subtle obstructions to knowledge, which is the primary obstacle to the attainment of full enlightenment, it is indispensable that that realization of emptiness is complemented with the factor of the bodhicitta, the awakening mind. So the point being made, I'm making is that in order for one to engage successfully in the Vajrayana practice, it is indispensable to have the realization of the sutra system of the path, particularly the realization of emptiness and bodhicitta. For a follower of the purely the perfectional vehicle, the sutra system of the path, there is no need for any realization of the Vajrayana path. But for the practitioners of Vajrayana, it is indispensable to have the realization of emptiness and bodhicitta, the awakening mind, as presented in the perfectional vehicle. If one's practice of the Vajrayana path, the deity yoga meditation, is really grounded upon the deep understanding of emptiness as presented in the sutra vehicle, and complemented with the bodhicitta, the practice of awakening mind, and then that very understanding of the understanding of the emptiness is then, on the level of imagination, assumes the form of whatever particular deity one may be practicing or emphasizing. And then, once you have a clear visualization of the deity, and then one needs to reflect upon the emptiness of that deity. So when you have that kind of a combination of a clear visualization of deity on the basis of understanding of emptiness, and then once again reflect upon the emptiness of that deity, then truly in one's practice, there will be the union of what is called the profound aspect of the path and the luminosity or the clarity aspect of the path as well.
So, 说空性的时候 当下我没办法修菩提心，那当下只是观修，遮除真实有的这种状态而已。所以陀先要先修学这个菩提心，升起强烈菩提心的时候，然后再观想，再想说，那我追求的菩提或者是追求者我，那他是怎么样的存在？那这是观，再去观想他是无自性的，他不是真实有。那无自性的这个见解，甚至说这种见解就是菩提心所摄持的是空正见，那靠这个空正见在现起本尊，那这之后再以本尊作为有法，然后再观本尊他是无自性。那虽然这两个空性是没有差别，之前的空性是它的有法是不清净的，之后的空性是我们内心所现起的清净本尊的空性，所以这两者的空性虽然是一样，但是它的有法就有清净和不清净的差别。
In terms of the content of your thought or your mental state, there will be a mere negation, the simple negation of the intrinsic existence. So what is required is initially to cultivate the bodhicitta, the awakening mind. And you know, once your experience of bodhicitta, the awakening mind becomes very strong and intense, and then at that point you should reflect upon the ultimate nature of that individual, this I who is aspiring for the attainment of Buddhahood for the benefit of all being, or on the nature of the sentient being for whose benefit you wish to attain enlightenment, or the nature of enlightenment itself. So you subject these and ultimately or eventually one's own self to critical analysis and examine whether or not they possess inherent existence. And once you arrive at the realization that the self too is devoid of intrinsic existence, and at that point you dwell your mind on that single-pointedly on that conclusion that you have arrived at, where you have totally negated any possibility of intrinsic existence of one's own self. And so then that state of mind, which is the realization of emptiness of one's own self, is then on the level of imagination as transforming into a deity, the form of a deity, whatever deity you may be visualizing. And then once you have a clear visualization of the deity, you then once again reflect upon the emptiness of that deity. So what you see here in this process is a two stages or two instances of meditation on emptiness. So at the initial stage, you meditate on the emptiness of yourself, your own existence. At the culmination, you meditate upon the emptiness of the deity. So insofar as both of these are realization of emptiness, they are equal. But the difference is in the former case, the object of the meditation of emptiness is a contaminated object, which is the unenlightened existence of your own self. Whereas in the latter case, and the object of the meditation on emptiness is an enlightened form, albeit on the level of imagination, but it is the form of the deity. So there is a difference between these two types of on the level of imagination, at least on the level of imagination. So although both of these are meditations on emptiness, there is a difference in terms of the object upon which the meditation on emptiness takes place.
那就这样。
多生少生不生，马杰帮侬解决，解帮解帮。光来光多表我了说，咱别把有些大钱把侬工作上不停，得先得得到根基先做到。要往得到当时劳动，我就从现在讲我当时听我话当来说动。大概给他找完这个叫上不解决劳动，我也当当工不闲的时候，给谁解决？想干这些要做这些嘛喽？ Dasa